Welcome back to another episode of It's a Crime, an exploration into deceit, betrayal, and the shocking truth that lies beneath.
I'm your host, Margaret McLean. This is episode 4 in the Anna Walsh missing persons case. Anna is still missing, yet it appears her husband is responsible in the most heinous way. And let me warn you now, this one will get dark, especially toward the end. But we'll start on a good note. Here's an announcement from Norfolk County District Attorney Michael Morrissey.
The continued investigation has now allowed police to obtain an arrest warrant charging Brian Walsh with the murder of his wife. Mr. Walsh will be transported to the Quincy District Court for arraignment on the charge of murder.
Yep, it's about time Brian Walsh is being charged with murder. Murder. How did detectives build that case? In the last episode, we discussed the police investigation, how they searched that dumpster in Swampscott, and the gruesome discovery of incriminating evidence against Brian, such as Anna's clothes, a hatchet, and a bloody Tyvek suit. The contents of the dumpster where police speculate that Brian tossed Anna's remains in heavy garbage bags was sadly incinerated. So, as I mentioned before, we have no body. That makes crime scene investigation crucial, according to former FBI agent Nicole Parker.
Good old-fashioned police work, interviews, you know, there's just a huge array of investigative techniques and efforts that law enforcement can use in this day and age that, although a body is ideal because it's the hard evidence, it's not necessary.
Let's start by focusing on another crime scene. There are multiple crime scenes in this case. The Walsh home, for example, in Cohasset. Dumpsters, and of course, Brian's car. When detectives first questioned Brian about his wife's disappearance, they walked up to his front door at the home he shared with Anna and their young children in Cohasset. They're trained at making observations, so they took a peek at the car in the driveway, which was Brian's Volvo. Now, the seats were completely down, and there was a plastic liner in the back of the car. Suspicious? Maybe. Maybe not. Remember, the police couldn't search that car until they had probable cause that a crime had been committed. Later, after that good old-fashioned police work that Agent Parker talked about, detectives learned that Brian's statements about where he had been around the time Anna went missing were lies. So, at that point, they applied for search warrants. This is what prosecutor Greg Connor said in court.
On the 8th, officers obtained search warrants for Mr. Walsh's home and vehicle. Mr. Walsh's Volvo SUV tested positive for the presumptive presence of blood in the driver's side seat control areas, the passenger floor mats, in the rear trunk area.
More blood. That's exactly why those seats were down. Brian put a liner in thinking he could dupe the police, but they still found it. We also know from episode 2 they found blood in the basement and a bloody knife. Brian is a bad cleaner. So off to the state crime lab it will go. They are going to be busy for this one. You might be wondering about the process on how they send this evidence to the lab. So here's retired State Police Captain Paul Zipper to explain.
Depending on what you want tested, you always fill out a form asking the crime lab to process whatever you need to be processed, and then they give you a case number back. In a case where you have a suspect, you're trying to build a case, there's a form that you fill out for a rush. You know, things are coming together and get it, you know, take a couple of months, think probably within a week or so, as opposed to if you don't have a suspect identified, it could take, you know, take a couple of months.
By the way, there's also a private lab called Bode Technologies where they send evidence for DNA analysis. That's going to be a big part of this case when it goes to trial. I'd like to know about the DNA results from the hacksaw.
The hacksaw that had red-brown staining in several areas When it was disassembled, a small fragment of bone was recovered. These items have been processed for DNA.
Wow, they found a bone fragment. I'd like to know exactly how big it was. And it's very significant because it might be the only piece of Anna that's left. Now this is interesting. Detectives discovered vital information from one of Anna's close friends in Washington, D.C.
On December 28th, Anna Walsh had dinner with a friend in Washington, D.C. and became uncharacteristically upset and told her friend that she believed that Mr. Walsh was going to be incarcerated as a result of his federal case and that she was prepared to leave him and take the children to Washington, D.C.
December 28th, that's only 3 days before New Year's Eve, 3 days before Anna was murdered. Imagine how that friend must feel. And we're also getting a glimpse into Anna's plans to leave Brian and take the kids with her.
On December 30th, she flew home and was with the family and expected not to return until January 3rd and was going to spend the long weekend with the family. On the 31st, she attended an exercise class. She also got her nails done at a local salon.
Well, it sounds like Anna was going to make the most of her New Year's Eve celebration with her husband and kids. I mean, she got her nails done. I wonder what was really going through her mind, though. She just told her friend that she wanted to leave Brian, and she was very upset. They also invited a very close family friend, Jem Mutlu, over for dinner and New Year's festivities. And he happily joined them that evening. Poor Jem, think about it. He was one of the last ones to see Anna alive, and I know he was very close with her. He must be rethinking that night every day. Like, what did I miss? You know, he did tell the police they had a very nice dinner Brian cooked, and they celebrated New Year's Eve. Anna appeared very happy. The three little boys played. It was a great night. And one of the most crazy, bizarre things of all is that note I was telling you about. So attached to a very expensive bottle of champagne was a love note from Anna to Brian. I've got to read it to you. She writes, "Let's make 2023 the best one yet. We are the authors of our lives. Courage, love, perseverance, compassion, and joy. Love, Anna." Remember, only 3 days before, it sounded like their marriage was falling apart. Call me crazy, but that letter sounded sincere and loving. I mean, she talks about courage, love, perseverance, joy. I mean, did she have a change of heart? Let's make the marriage work. It's going to be the best year yet. How sad. It turned out to be the worst year for Anna, their children, who lost both parents, and Brian facing murder charges. Poor Anna, her dreams were just cut short. Here's somebody that grew up in war-torn Serbia, emigrated to the United States, and built a career for herself in the hospitality business. Co-workers sang her praises. And then she met a guy, Brian Walsh. He wanted her and he got her, and by 2013, they were hot and heavy. But there's something disturbing that happened during their relationship. They were dating for about a year and must have gotten in quite a bad fight. It escalated to the point where Anna went to the police and said Brian threatened to kill her and her friend. She must have really feared for her life to go to the police like that. Ultimately, nothing came of it, and they kissed and made up. She took him back. Is that crazy? Why on earth would she stay with a guy who threatened to kill her? This is what forensic psychologist Dr. Tina Adams hypothesizes.
He could have fed her a lot of information to gain her trust, to gain her attachment. That is not particularly true or grounded in reality. It is a means to an end.
I imagine he cried on her shoulder. He must have gotten down on his knees and begged her back. And that's evident in a letter to the judge in Brian's art fraud case. When I met Brian, I witnessed his kindness and generosity on many occasions. However, I also saw the level of suffering in his life. He was afraid of relationships and for years did not allow anyone to get close to him, including me. He was clearly in doubt that he could be loved for who he truly was.
If he's distrusting, if he thinks that the world is a harsh place, then he approaches social situations like that. Distrustful, suspicious, on guard, hypervigilant. In response to perceived negative reactions from others, that fight or flight kicks in. He is angry, aggressive, and in the context of being suspicious, he's going to think he has to defend himself and not really care about the other person's needs or personal rights or, just disregard for that.
Yeah, I wonder what really went on behind closed doors there. Anna must have had doubts, especially when she learned the details of Brian's criminal behavior in the art fraud case. I wanted to know. Remember I told you about my long meeting with Anna's friend Pam? Well, I asked her about that. I guess Brian spun his own narrative, basically claiming he didn't know the Warhols were fake. Perhaps Anna wanted to believe him. I also asked Pam what she thought of Brian. Pam didn't see Brian as a whack job or the sociopath that he is. He came across as a nice guy, perhaps a little reserved, but overall he was fun to be around. She described Anna as a very bright, positive person who would absolutely do anything for you. Pam told me that Anna was a fixer who believed that people could truly change their ways. She thought she could fix Brian. But I wonder, is Brian Walsh fixable?
I am aware of the affidavits that former treating professionals have written. And what is consistent is the diagnosis of Brian being a sociopath with very little hope for any change in that.
A sociopath, which is a mental health disorder characterized by disregard for other people. I asked Dr. Adams if there was ever any hope for Brian. What do you do if you're Anna? Do you see the red flags and run?
Personality disorders are chronic, but with intervention, external interventions and supports, sometimes that means court intervention, incarceration. At other times, it means hospitalization for extended periods of time. It's cognitive behavioral therapy, trying to get individuals to see the errors in their thinking and perceptions of the world, establishing enough structure around this person that they can manage so that they are safe and other people are safe.
Brian was an expert at disguising his personality disorder. Even right after Anna went missing, Pam and their friends went over to his house to try to help him find Anna. They would have never guessed that he had just butchered his wife right there in that very house. In my opinion, it would take a lot of therapy to fix Brian. Now, Brian did enroll in life coaching groups costing nearly $3,000 in January of 2020. I wouldn't be surprised if his lawyer told him to do it to impress the judge. In a letter to the court, Anna writes, "During this program, he established what integrity was all about, as well as accountability, responsibility, and clear communication." It's a bunch of BS. He wouldn't have done it on his own. This either goes to her positive thinking that she could fix her husband, or she wrote it to try and convince the judge not to incarcerate him. I'm sure she didn't want the father of her children serving time in federal prison. What comes out next is a bombshell. As you know, Anna worked in Washington, D.C. during the week, and it appears that she met someone else.
In December of 2022, it had become evident that Mr. Walsh was suspecting his wife of having an affair. He was routinely visiting the Instagram page of one of her male friends. And on December 26th, his mother with his input and direction, obtained and hired a private investigator to surveil Anna Walsh in Washington, D.C.
Brian's desperate here. He hired a private investigator. And Pam was not aware of Anna's affair. In fact, I asked her and she didn't believe it. But somehow Brian found out. And if you go back to what Dr. Adams said, as a sociopath, he is naturally distrusting and suspicious. He's got that fight or flight mentality. He's going to react and unravel. And that's when he becomes really dangerous. Well, let me warn you, this is going to get very dark. You're not going to believe what detectives found when they searched Brian's electronic devices and those belonging to his children. You might be wondering whether law enforcement can use that stuff against him. Well, I asked Agent Parker if she had used information gathered from electronic devices to get convictions in her federal cases.
Absolutely. Yep. Very powerful evidence.
And Google searches can be used against somebody too.
And yes, I have worked investigations where we are looking at every single thing they're doing on their devices, not just Google searches, but everything. And yes, Google searches are extremely powerful. As an investigator, I can tell you that there is an extremely abundant amount of information that you can obtain. And so you might be thinking, hey, I'm looking incognito. I just assume that anything that you type into any device can be recovered.
Brian thought he was smart by using his son's iPad. On December 27th, he researched best and worst states to get divorced in. That's very interesting timing because it's the day before Anna met with her friend in Washington, saying she was going to leave Brian and take the kids. What you're about to hear is very grisly. It's like a horror movie, grisly.
What happens is later on in the early morning hours at approximately 4:50 a.m., the oldest child's iPad begins to visit websites that concern how long does it take for a dead body to smell? How long does it take for someone to be missing to be declared dead? It also visited websites and made numerous searches on this matter at 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Included was also how long someone must go missing in order to collect.
This is nuts. He was Googling around 4:50 a.m., about 5 hours after the ball came down on New Year's Eve. How long does it take for a body to smell? Brian must have just killed his wife at that point. He's dealing with a dead body while his kids are sleeping upstairs. And then he immediately thinks about collecting on life insurance. Unbelievable. It's all about money for him. He wants his $2.7 million. And then the idiot Googles again.
From 2 a.m. to approximately 5:30 a.m., the oldest child's iPad searched and visited websites concerning instructions on how to clean blood and DNA from objects, how to remove SIM cards from phones, how to mix ammonia, and search for apartment complex in Brockton, Massachusetts. The oldest child's iPad continued to make searches on websites detailing how long Lowe's maintains security videos, how apartments maintain surveillance, and numerous articles about dismembering a human body.
You heard it right. Brian Walsh Googled how to dismember a human body. It's sick. We're going to go into those additional Google searches and really delve into the mind of a desperate sociopath. He enters into the search bar, hacksaw, best tool to dismember. And he went out and bought one, remember? I imagine he put that white Tyvek suit on and hacked her up with it. They found the bone fragment in the hacksaw, too. He also searched how to embalm a body and what does formaldehyde do. I mean, formaldehyde? That's what they use in funeral homes. It turns a human body into a cadaver. Jeffrey Dahmer stored body parts in formaldehyde, too. Maybe that's where Brian was going with this. Was he about to store his wife in jars in the pantry? I certainly wouldn't want to go to dinner at his house. And then he searched, can you identify a body with broken teeth? Broken teeth! Did he break her teeth before or after he killed her? Like a mobster. Whitey Bulger had his guys extract the teeth. Brian must have watched Black Mass. He also searched, what happens to hair on a dead body? That's a weird one. I don't really know where he was going with that. Here's one. Can baking soda make a body smell good? Was he bothered by her smell as he chopped her up? And then, how to dispose of a 115-pound woman's body? That certainly fits Anna's description. I can picture Brian panicking here. What do I do now? Do I drive someplace with the body and dump her deep in the woods? It was January, so it would be tough to get in a boat and dump her in the ocean, so he had a dilemma. I think he was leaning toward dumping her in the woods because he searched, what is the rate of decomposition of a body found in a plastic bag compared to on a surface in the woods? He was thinking he'd get away with it because he Googled, can you be charged with murder without a body? Brian, you can listen to my podcast in jail and get your answer to that. Overall, this is one of the most disturbing cases I've ever seen. I can't imagine anyone using a hacksaw to chop up another human being, especially your beloved wife and mother of your children. And also, to think that Anna's body will never be recovered. How do the relatives and close friends of Anna's cope?
Difficult tragedy for anyone to deal with. Having worked violent crime, it's really difficult when you have no body. When there's no body, there's no closure for a lot of families. And to not be able to cope with that and to be able to lay her to rest is difficult. But I think that through time and through understanding and as the investigation is solved, that is what brings closure to these families of violent crime. When there is no body, but there is still justice served, that is going to be their best coping mechanism in this situation.
With all this evidence against him, Brian Walsh was arraigned at Norfolk Superior Court on April 27, 2023, on charges of first-degree murder, misleading a police investigation, and conveying a human body. And to each charge, Brian pled,
not guilty, not guilty, not guilty.
I'll be following this case when it goes to trial, and we'll update you on any major developments before that. For now, I'd like to conclude with thoughts and prayers for the victim, Anna Walsh. Here's a written statement that Anna's close friend, Pam, sent me to share. Anna was a woman of passion, love, and joy. She showed up for so many people in her life with such intense energy. It was hard not to leave an interaction with her without a smile on your face or renewed energy for your day. She always took more interest in what was going on in your life and believed in the best in everyone to her detriment. Anna dreamed of having a life of passion, ambition, joy, and heartfelt experiences with her family and friends. There are so many things I miss about Anna. We always had the best evenings with her and Brian, just enjoying each other's company, a glass of wine, and a meal in one of our homes. Anna impacted hundreds of lives in such a positive way, especially her boys. We will forever be changed because Anna was in our life, but also because she was taken way, way too soon. I'm your host, Margaret McLean. Thank you for listening to It's a Crime.